Welcome to episode 192 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of June 18th, 2012. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, Lance Armstrong and another doping affair. San Francisco cyclist charged with felony vehicular manslaughter. A cyclist family sues Strava over a death. And there's new bike stamps all over the world. Plus, results from the world of professional cycling, the UCI World Tour rankings, some retirements, some people opting out of the Olympics, and Alberto Contador prepares to return to professional cycling. Plus, a special message from Mrs. Fredcast. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you with us. It's a busy time here in the Fredcast studios. Not to mention the news that's going on, which we'll get to in a minute. But by the way, I'm excited. Anybody notice no product recalls this week? I'm very, very excited about that. I hope you are too. But it's busy around here. We're getting ready for the Tour de France. And of course, it's press camp time. So stay tuned. We've got a number of shows coming at you over the next few days. I just returned from dinner over at press camp, and I'm going to see a lot of brands with some really cool stuff for 2012 and 2013. What episode of the Fredcast would be complete without my taking some time to thank our friends and our show sponsors, Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. This evening I had the opportunity to have dinner with my good friend Carlton Reed and my friend D.L. Byron from Bike Hugger, but sitting next to me at the table was Hugo from Nog. That's K-N-O-G. And Nog is just one of the dozens, perhaps hundreds of brands that are available at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Matter of fact, go into thefredcast.com right now, and there is a banner on the page where Jensen USA has a great sale going on right now on messenger bags, some of them up to 80% off, and you can't beat that. Now, Nog is just one of the brands that's here at Press Camp that I know is also available at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And as I've told you before, Jensen USA is where they have an amazing selection of products and brands at some incredible prices and with customer service that is unparalleled and just can't be beat. So stay tuned all week as we're at Press Camp. I'll let you know which brands are available to you on Jensen USA. But in the meantime, anytime you're looking for anything for your cycling needs, go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast or simply go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. We thank Jensen USA so much for their support, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, there's no doubt what the top story is this week, and you knew this is what was going to open the Fredcast, so we might as well get to it. Unless you've been living under the rock for the last few days, you know by now that the United States Anti-Doping Agency has filed formal charges against Lance Armstrong and several of his associates, threatening to strip him of his 7 Tour de France maillot jaunes and to ban him from future competitions. The letter, dated June 12, 2012, was addressed to Lance Armstrong, Johan Brunel, Dr. Pedro Celaya, Dr. Luis Garcia del Moral, Dr. Michele Ferrari, and Pepe Marti of the UCI. In the letter, it is alleged that Lance Armstrong and the others engaged in a variety of doping offenses, including using and promoting the use of, including the furnishing of, EPO, blood doping, testosterone, human growth hormone, and corticosteroids. Now, the letter does not state specific evidence pointing to failed doping tests. However, it does state that USADA has in its possession blood samples, which, over the course of several years, demonstrate to USADA's researchers a pattern that indicates the use of some of these substances, including EPO and blood doping. Plus, USADA says that it has a number of witnesses who will testify to their personal knowledge of and to witnessing Lance Armstrong's use of and or furnishing of doping to riders on his professional cycling teams. Now, who are some of these witnesses? Well, they're not named in the letter. It's a 15-page letter, by the way, and I have linked to the PDF that the Wall Street Journal was able to obtain, so you can go ahead and check that out in the show notes. They're not naming these riders in the letter, but it is widely assumed that among two of them would be Floyd Landis and Tyler Hamilton. When the news of these charges was released, Lance Armstrong issued a statement on his website. I'll read it to you in its entirety. He says, "I've been notified that USADA, an organization largely funded by taxpayer dollars but governed only by self-written rules, intends to again dredge up discredited allegations dating back more than 16 years to prevent me from competing as a triathlete and try and strip me of the 7 Tour de France victories I earned. These are the very same charges and the same witnesses that the Justice Department chose not to pursue after a 2-year investigation. These charges are baseless, motivated by spite, and advanced through testimony bought and paid for by promises of anonymity and immunity. Although USADA alleges a wide-ranging conspiracy extended over more than 16 years, I am the only athlete it has chosen to charge. USADA's malice, its methods, its star chamber practices, and its decision to punish first and adjudicate later all are at odds with our ideals of fairness and fair play. I have never doped, and unlike many of my accusers, I have competed as an endurance athlete for 25 years with no spike in performance, passed more than 500 drug tests, and never failed one. That USADA ignores this fundamental distinction and charges me instead of the admitted dopers says far more about USADA, its lack of fairness, and this vendetta than it does about my guilt or innocence." Now, I'll come back and parse this statement for you in a moment. But a couple of other things have happened since the original letter came out and Lance's response. Now, Lance has been participating as a triathlete in Ironman competitions, purportedly in the hope that he would be able to participate in the Ironman World Championships in Kona, Hawaii, later this year. Those events are governed by the WTC, the World Triathlon Corporation. Now, WTC has a rule that indicates that if an athlete is under suspicion or investigation for a doping offense, they are not allowed to participate in WTC-sanctioned events. As a result, Andrew Messick, the CEO of the WTC, said that the board of directors had met and had decided that Lance Armstrong would not be allowed to participate in WTC-sanctioned triathlons, at least for the time being. And that includes an upcoming triathlon in France for which Lance was preparing. Now, Lance is currently able to participate in non-WTC-sanctioned events. My guess is that the decision on that is up to each of the individual sanctioning bodies of those events. The letter presents a litany of charges, each of which is slightly different for each of the individuals mentioned, Johan Bruneel and the doctors and other administrators of the teams. But for Lance Armstrong, the person on whom most people are focusing in this probe, they state specifically, use and or attempted use of prohibited substances and or methods, including EPO, blood transfusions, testosterone, corticosteroids, and masking agents. Possession of prohibited substances and or methods, including EPO, blood transfusions, and related equipment, like needles and things like that, testosterone, corticosteroids, and masking agents. Trafficking of EPO, testosterone, and corticosteroids. Administration and or attempted administration to others of EPO, testosterone, and cortisone. Assisting, encouraging, aiding, abetting, covering up, and other complicity involving one or more anti-doping rule violations and or attempted anti-doping rule violations. And finally, aggravating circumstances justifying a period of ineligibility greater than the standard sanction. So this is what USADA is claiming against Lance Armstrong, and he has until June 22nd to file a written response, and then the case could eventually go before an arbitration panel to consider all of the evidence. And in that case, they're saying that Lance should expect a hearing before the end of November. Now, you may recall in a recent interview, Lance Armstrong essentially throwing up his hands and saying, I'm done. If there's any more charges brought against me, I'm not responding. There's going to be no more. So the question among some people is whether or not Lance is actually going to fight these charges. Based on his response, I'm going to guess that he probably is, and considering he's got a foundation and, of course, a legacy to and a reputation to defend, my guess is he probably will defend himself against these charges. Now, I want to go back to Lance's statement, because within Lance's statement lie a number of questions that people have brought up over the last few days. So, first of all, he says that these are his words now, quote, the very same charges and the same witnesses that the Justice Department chose not to pursue after a two-year investigation. Well, that's not entirely true. Well, it seems so far that USADA is using some of the same witnesses and testimony and evidence that was brought in the grand jury investigation against Lance Armstrong by the government. You have to remember that the government was not specifically investigating Lance Armstrong for doping. Their case centered around fraud. It wasn't about the use of performance-enhancing drugs. It was simply about fraud, considering the fact that the U.S. Postal Service team was using sponsorship funds from a pseudo-governmental agency. Okay, let's go back to Lance Armstrong's statement. He then says that although USADA alleges a wide-ranging conspiracy extended over more than 16 years, he's the only athlete that it's chosen to charge, and he's saying that this is because the other athletes who are coming out against him have been granted, quote, promises of anonymity and immunity, unquote. The flub was mine, not Lance's. Now, while that may or may not be true, time will tell. Even if it is true, that's sort of a common practice in these kinds of cases. Look, USADA is claiming conspiracy. USADA is claiming a period of time and certain behaviors that in those kinds of cases, it is common practice to take the lower level people on the totem pole, grant them immunity from prosecution for telling the truth in order to go after the bigger fish. Because here, Lance is saying he's upset that they're not going after these guys who are, in his words, admitted dopers. Yet, if the government is able to make an example of Lance Armstrong, if he did dope, then that's going to send a message to athletes throughout the sporting world that you can't get away with it. All right, now, he then says, I've never doped, and unlike many of my accusers, I've competed as an endurance athlete for 25 years with no spike in performance, passed more than 500 drug tests, and never failed one. And he then says that USADA has chosen to ignore those facts. But what USADA specifically says in their letter is that they have looked at blood collections. These are their words now. Quote, blood collections obtained by the UCI from Lance Armstrong in 2009 and 2010, fully consistent with blood manipulation, including EPO use and or blood transfusions. Parsing that statement, what they're saying is that, yes, Mr. Armstrong, you passed every doping test you took. But when we look at your blood samples over a period of time, a biological passport, if you will, it is showing us indications that there was manipulation going on and possible use. In other words, maybe your doctors were so sophisticated that they knew how to get around the tests. That's not an accusation. It's simply saying this is something that we need to look at and determine whether or not this is actually the case. Well, for many people, that begs the question. If he never failed a test, if they have no positives, A samples or B samples, in a doping test, how can they charge him without having a positive test? Well, the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, we've talked about them a lot here on the show, says that anti-doping authorities are allowed to charge athletes based on what they call, quote, non-analytical positives. Translation, evidence that there's a doping violation that doesn't come from a positive test. What kind of evidence? Well, it could be witness testimony, eyewitness testimony, documents, correspondence, financial records, or the possession of banned substances. Now, in this case, USADA is saying, we've got witnesses who say that they saw you use various substances and that you encouraged others to do so. And now we take this and we couple it with this blood evidence, all of that together wrapped up in a ball, says to USADA, we believe that you were involved in doping violations. And according to WADA rules, they're allowed to charge Lance based on that information. Okay, so those are the procedural issues. We know where we're headed now. We know why he's being charged and what he's being charged with. And of course, not just Lance, it's the others as well. But then that brings up a lot of personal and emotional arguments. Let's start with the first. Leave Lance alone. This all happened in the past. Why are you dredging this up again? Why are you constantly going after Lance? And as Lance says in his own statement, why aren't you going after these other guys? They admit that they doped. Well, I think it goes back to something that I said earlier. The fact of the matter is, none of the other people who are claiming to be eyewitnesses, and I can pretty much say this as a fact, won 7 Tours de France and won them year after year after year, for 7 years. This is arguably, well, Lance Armstrong has to be the world's most famous professional cyclist. Some would say he's one of, what, the top five, top 10 most famous professional athletes of all time? If that's the case, and if USADA actually believes that they have evidence that proves or shows a possibility that Lance Armstrong doped, they believe that they owe it to the world of sport and the charter under which they live to bring charges against Lance Armstrong. Now, if, let me say this again so that any attorneys listening hear it, if it actually is the case that USADA has compelling evidence, I've got to agree with them. They have no choice but to bring these charges for the integrity and the sanctity of sport. Professional cycling is not professional wrestling, nor is soccer, nor for that matter, coincidentally, the Roger Clemens verdict comes out today indicating that the jury believed that he was not guilty of perjury, nor is professional baseball. And if Roger Clemens doped, he should be charged. Barry Bonds, similarly. Florence Griffith Joyner, and yes, Lance Armstrong. So it's the integrity of sport angle that gives them the reason to go after the highest echelon, if they can. And as far as how long it's been, again, my personal opinion, doesn't matter. Bjarne Riis should be sanctioned. Eddie Merckx, if he doped, should be sanctioned because it is about honesty and integrity. And listen, I get the emails, the blog posts all the time. I'm old fashioned. I'm behind the times. That's fine. I'm a dad. I want my kids to grow up in a world where the examples, the people who exemplify whatever their career is, sports, science, music, they get to the top fairly. So that's a dad's angle, at least. All right. So that's number one. Number two, people are always saying, well, how can you go after Lance? He's a cancer survivor. He's a cancer advocate. If you bring down Lance, you're going to bring down Livestrong. All right. There are those of you in the audience who think I hate Lance Armstrong. I don't. I admire Lance Armstrong for his athletic prowess. I admire Lance Armstrong for his competitiveness and for what he's been able to achieve, not only as an athlete, but also by surviving cancer and by becoming an amazing advocate for the cancer community, be it victims or research and everything in between. As a matter of fact, as I looked around the table tonight at dinner at press camp, I was one of the few sitting around still wearing a Livestrong band. And as we talked about this case, and as I talked about my advocacy for getting to the bottom of it, to getting to the truth, Carlton pointed out, well, why are you still wearing the yellow band? Because I support Lance Armstrong, the cancer fighter and the cancer advocate and the work that Livestrong does. If, however, Lance Armstrong is proven to have used performance-enhancing drugs or to encourage their use among his teammates, I'll continue to wear the yellow band, but I won't support Lance Armstrong as an athlete at that point. I hope that that makes sense to you. So, and for those of you who are concerned that Livestrong will go down if Lance Armstrong, that's not going to happen, folks. Livestrong, if you'll forgive me, lives on its own now and can survive without Lance and without the image of Lance, the super cyclist. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. But look, it is my fervent hope that if we're moving down this road, and it certainly appears we are, that as we do so, it is my hope that this is the last time we go down the road. Let's be done with it. USADA has filed their charges. Let's go through the process and let's find out the truth. And from there, let's move on. Guilty, not guilty, did it, didn't do it. Let's go through the process, find out, and all of us, no matter what side you fall on, let's try to accept it and move on. For the good of professional cycling, for the good of the sporting world, for the good of the cancer community, and for the good of the Fredcast, let's move on. So I'll follow the story all the way through. I will bring you the detail as it comes out, and I welcome your comments, and I'd really love your audio comments. So feel free, give us a call on the Fredcast listener hotline. Let me know your thoughts. Okay, moving on. There's another story that I'd like to bring to you, which is becoming a bit of a flashpoint for cyclists. In this case, not road cyclists, but commuting cyclists, and actually cyclists of all stripes and colors. This is the case of Chris Boucher. You'll recall we spoke about Mr. Boucher a couple of weeks ago, a couple of episodes ago here on the Fredcast. He is the gentleman who was riding his bicycle in San Francisco, went through an intersection in the Castro District, and struck and killed 71-year-old Suchi Hui, striking Mr. Hui and killing him. According to District Attorney George Gascon in San Francisco, Mr. Boucher has now been charged with felony vehicular manslaughter in that case, facing up to 6 years in prison. According to Mr. Gascon, quote, Mr. Hui was in the crosswalk legally. It does not appear that Mr. Boucher was attempting to stop. He was trying to beat his own record in complete disregard for the safety of anyone else, unquote. Now, what he's talking about there, we assume, when he talks about trying to beat his own record, there were stories on the internet in the days and weeks following the accident, indicating that one of the reasons perhaps that Boucher was speeding through the intersection was because he was trying to beat his own record or his own time on the social networking fitness site Strava. If that is the case and they're able to prove that, I think that's fairly damning evidence against Mr. Boucher. Mr. Gascon going on to say, I'm hoping this case serves to raise awareness that the rules of the road apply to everyone. Now, got to say, I agree with Mr. Gascon in this case, because the problem is that as the number of cyclists has increased in the last few years on the streets here in America and elsewhere, so have the tensions between pedestrians and motorists and cyclists. Unfortunately, for a lot of pedestrians and motorists, they don't see those of us who tend to follow the rules more often than not. Instead, they see the not times, or they see the cyclists who tend to flaunt the rules nonstop. The alley catters, some of the messengers, the critical mass riders, or at least some of them, and that is contributing to the problem. Now, in this particular case, prosecutors apparently believe that the light was indeed yellow when Boucher went through the light. However, it is reported that a motorist saw Boucher, quote unquote, fly through several red lights and stop signs leading up to the intersection where the accident occurred. Plus, there's apparently surveillance video showing Boucher going through the intersection in a tucked position, making, again, quoting, little to no attempt, unquote, to stop before hitting Huey. Well, with all of this, the question is, why did it take so long for police and prosecutors to make the charge? And that's because they needed the time for the investigation to track down and interview as many people as they could, some of whom will probably be witnesses at the trial. So this is a case that bears watching, because it again, is one of those cases that can be a flashpoint, can be that instance, that impetus for change, both for the good, for those of us who are looking for better cycling citizenry, as we talk about here all the time, or for the worse, in the way of more regulations, more crackdowns on cyclists in major cities. I mean, look at what's been going on in the city of New York. So this is one that bears watching. I'll bring you details as they appear. In a parallel development to the Boucher case comes information from the sfgate.com website that I found via our friend Fritz over at Cyclicious. This is the case of William Kim Flint, a 41-year-old electrical engineer who died in a cycling accident on June 19, 2010. In the lawsuit filed by his family, by attorney Susan Kang, it is alleged that the reason for the accident was the negligence of the website Strava. According to Kang, quote, if they're going to host events, give away prizes, and draw in users to get the fastest times, then someone should at least come out and see that the routes are safe, unquote. Again, according to Kang, Kim Flint was, in her words, quote unquote, obsessed with the times posted on the Strava website. Now, if you're familiar with Strava, it's in some ways similar to some of the other mapping websites that you may or may not have used for cycling routes, things like Map My Ride, Ride Keeper, Run Keeper, things like that. And what it allows you to do is to map rides that you've taken and to upload and keep those on their website so you can compare and keep track of your training. But Strava takes it a step further, bringing a social aspect that allows you to compare your times against others and go for achievements, just like you might have in Foursquare and other social sites. In this case, according to Kang, Flint was simply, as she said, obsessed with being a record holder or a king of the mountain. So at the time of the accident, Flint was going more than 40 miles per hour on a particular street. He had to brake to avoid hitting a car. He flipped his bike over. He was thrown to the pavement, and unfortunately, he later died at a local hospital. As part of the evidence that Kang is using in her case was a tweet that Flint wrote just 2 weeks earlier, in which he said, quote, 49.3 miles per hour on a bike, how I find religion on Sunday morning, unquote. Kang, of course, did compare the Flint case to the Boucher case. And when a Strava spokesperson was asked for a comment, Rachel Parsons, Strava's marketing vice president, said, quote, we don't have a comment. An interesting case. I'm very curious to see how it comes out. I interviewed one of the principals of Strava at Interbike last year. I found the concept of Strava and the motivation that it provides to a lot of cyclists intriguing. I, for one, don't use it. I don't want to show you how slow I am going up a hill. But for those of you who are into that, I could totally see how it would be great to compare yourself against friends, club members, even to strangers, and to try to win those achievements. In this case, did it cause, or was it a proximate cause of Mr. Flint's death? Time will tell as far as what a court believes. What do you think? Do you think that a website or the pursuit of an achievement on a social networking website would drive you to ride a little bit more recklessly, with a little less care than you might normally? I'm interested to hear what you think. Hey, if you live in the United States or perhaps in the Isle of Man, have you been to the post office lately? This is kind of cool. Here in the United States, we our first class postage rates, well, they keep going up. And as a result, the United States Postal Service a few years ago introduced the concept of the forever stamp. Let's say, for instance, that first class postage is 42 cents and you buy forever stamps. Instead of them saying 42 cents on them, they're forever, which means that today, if it's 42 cents, great, that's what you paid for the stamp. But if in a year from now it's $1.42, those 42 cent stamps still cover first class postage. And for those of you who would like to buy forever stamps and show your favorite avocation, well, the time is now, because the U.S. Postal Service recently released their Bicycling Forever stamps. The four stamps feature a young child just learning to ride with training wheels, a commuter pedaling to work, a road racer intent on the finish line, and an airborne BMX racer. The stamps are available at your U.S. Post Office, and they are 45 cents a piece. Now, that's as of this, you know, this podcast. You never know what the Postal Service is going to do next week. Meanwhile, across the pond, as my friend Carlton Reed hates it when I say, the Isle of Man has released some new postage stamps featuring, well, perhaps one of their favorite sons, Mark Cavendish. The stamps feature key moments from Cavendish's career, including winning the Men's World Road Race Road Championship and the Tour de France green jersey. Mark Cavendish was quoted as saying, quote, I'm proud to feature in this stamp collection and delighted with the images. It's a great honor for me personally, but also it's a reflection of the widespread interest in cycling now, and that is always great to see. The stamps come in a variety of denominations and were released today, June the 19th. I went on the Isle of Man post office website and purchased a sheet of my own because I don't know. I think it's kind of cool, and I'm going to frame them and put them up right next to my Bicycling Forever stamps. I put links in the show notes to where you can find information on both the Isle of Man and the United States cycling stamps. Well, with that, let's look at some pro racing news. Specifically, let's look at some results some upcoming races, and then we can talk about some individual riders as well. First of all, let's talk about the Critérium du Dauphiné Libéré, which took place from June the 9th through the 17th. And this was Bradley Wiggins' second consecutive win in the Dauphiné Libéré. Bradley Wiggins winning the race in 26 hours, 40 minutes, and 46 seconds. Second place going to Michael Rogers, third to Cadel Evans, fourth to Chris Froome, and fifth to Jürgen Vandenbroeck from Team Lotto. According to Wiggins, quote, "I think we're getting better at it. This race has been a lot smoother than the others this season. We have a full lineup as well that we didn't have for the other races because everyone's getting ready for the tour now. We had all of our strong guys here, and it made a huge difference this week. It's getting easier each time, not in terms of the efforts, but staying cool at the right moments and knowing what to do and when to do it." Lots of talk right now leading up to the Tour de France. The Dauphiné is, for a lot of riders, a traditional lead-up to the Tour de France, as is the next race we'll talk about in a moment, the Tour de Suisse in Switzerland. And you certainly heard the name Bradley Wiggins there. He's widely considered to be a possible favorite for this year's Tour de France. Cadel Evans, the defending Tour de France champion. But a name you didn't hear there in the top five was Andy Schleck. You may recall in the last episode of the Fredcast, I mentioned that Andy Schleck was not having a great time of it so far this year. He actually was knocked to the ground by a really strong gust of wind in stage four of the Critérium du Dauphiné Libéré, and he abandoned on Saturday during the second to last stage of the Dauphiné. According to director sportif Alan Galipin of Radio Shack Nissan, quote, "He couldn't pedal anymore. Since he crashed during the time trial, the whole right side of his body was hurting. He was climbing all right, but he was suffering to hold his bike. Yesterday, he managed to finish, but today, racing had become too difficult." Schleck said that this was a, quote, "big disappointment." Continuing, quote, "While I was sitting in the car and I saw the other riders racing, I cracked mentally. As a bike rider, you're mentally very strong, but today it all went a bridge too far." I like that turn of a phrase. "Today, from the start already, in the first 200 meters, I had pain in the right leg and the lower back, and it just got worse. I was never suffering like this in a race. I couldn't use my right leg anymore. There were no other options than to quit the race." Now, since then, we've learned that Andy Schleck, who did abandon the Dauphiné and who has all been considered a possible favorite for this year's Tour de France, especially after recently being given the yellow jersey in the 2010 Tour de France as a result of Alberto Contador's doping ban, while he has been considered a favorite for this year's race, we learned just a few days ago that Andy Schleck will not be participating in the 2012 edition of the Tour de France because of the injuries he sustained in the Dauphiné, including a cracked vertebrae. And Andy's departure from the squad at this year's 2012 Tour de France for Radio Shack Nissan Track may have opened the door for another racer. You see, because originally, when the tentative team roster for Radio Shack Nissan Track was announced about a week or so ago by the team, the name Chris Horner was conspicuously absent from the list. Many people, many fans especially, were quite upset, going on Twitter and other social networks, loudly voicing their disapproval. But now that Andy Schleck is out of the 2012 Tour de France, there has been room opened up for Chris Horner. And when we looked at the roster on the team website today, there indeed was Chris Horner's name. Elsewhere on the continent, it was the Tour de Suisse taking part in Switzerland, June 9th through the 17th. And I got to tell you, if you listened to my reporting of this year's tour of Amgen Tour of California, you'll recall one name kept coming up as a stage winner. And who do you think won four stages in this year's Tour de Suisse. Well, if you wanted to say Peter Sagan, you would be correct. This young man is looking to be quite the contender in years to come. So we're going to keep our eyes on Peter Sagan. But the final general classification in this year's Tour de Suisse went to Rui Costa of the Movistar team. Second place going to Frank Schleck. Third to Levi Leipheimer. Fourth to Robert Hessink. And fifth to Mikel Nieve Iturralde. Sixth place, Roman Kreuziger. Seventh, Tommy Danielson. Eighth, Steven Krujwijk. Go ahead, crucify me. I know I got his name wrong. Ninth, Alejandro Valverde, and 10th, Nicholas Roach. And the reason why I read all 10 is because if you look at the GC in the Tour de Suisse, if you look at the GC in the Dauphiné, you are looking at your GC contenders, many of them, for the 2012 Tour de France. Well, with all those races in the books, it's time to look at the current UCI World Tour rankings. These rankings as of June 17th, 2012. Leading off the ranking, actually the top four have not changed since the last rankings. Joaquin Rodriguez, Tom Bonin, Brad Wiggins, Vincenzo Nibali, followed by Peter Sagan, Sammy Sanchez, Simon Gerrans, Ryder Hejdal, Michael Rogers, and Roman Kreuziger. The next race on the UCI World Tour calendar, well, it's probably one you've never heard of before. It starts on June the 30th. Believe it or not, it goes all the way to July the 22nd. Yep, it's the annual spectacle known as the Tour de France. We'll be looking for that to start on June the 30th with coverage here on the Fredcast, as always. And lining up at this year's Tour de France, 39-year-old George Hincapie from the United States, a five-time Olympian and a veteran of numerous Tours de France, including working as Lance Armstrong's lieutenant for his seven Tour de France victories. George Hincapie has announced that this will be his last Tour de France, as Hincapie will be retiring at the end of the 2012 race season. Hincapie saying, quote, "I came to the conclusion that I want to go out while I still can contribute and make a difference. To be able to compete for 19 years as a professional cyclist has been something I would have never dreamed of doing. But at the same time, it's also going to be good to spend more time with my kids, who are getting to be the age where they miss me when I'm gone." Hincapie, a United States National Road Race Champion in 1998, 2006, and 2009, continued to chase and never able to catch his dream of winning Paris-Roubaix, although he did come in second place in Paris-Roubaix in 2005. He's also won, well, a bunch of stages in the Tour de France, Gent-Wevelgem, and also the Tour of Missouri. George Hincapie, perhaps one of the most beloved, well, at least American cyclists in the peloton, especially among the ladies, because he is quite the looker, I'm told. But he's always seen with a smile, always good with the fans. And I think that at least among American fans and perhaps among the professional peloton, I think George Hincapie will definitely be missed. Although, considering his business in the world of cycling and his passion for the sport, I just don't think that this is the last we'll see of George Hincapie. Another announcement that caught the attention of American cycling fans was the announcement by USA Cycling of the Olympic lineup for the United States team. The London Olympic Games coming up July 28th through August 12th. Those making the men's road cycling team: recently crowned USA road champion Timmy Duggan, Tyler Farah, Chris Horner, Taylor Finney, and TJ Van Garderen. On the women's side for the road, Kristen Armstrong, Amber Nebben, Shelley Olds, and Evelyn Stevens. For the track, Dotsie Bosch, Sarah Hammer, Bobby Lay, Jenny Reed, Lauren Tamayo, and Jimmy Watkins. Men's BMX, David Herman. Women's BMX, Ariel Martin. Men's mountain bike, Sammy Schultz and Todd Wells. And women's mountain bike, Lee Davidson and Georgia Gould. Another interesting announcement that came shortly after the Olympic squad roster came out was an announcement by USA Cycling that Levi Leipheimer, George Hincapie, Christian Vandeveld, and Dave Zabriskie had all asked to be taken out of the running for places on the road cycling team for the Summer Games on the USA team. USA Cycling saying, quote, USA Cycling will not speculate on the reasoning behind their requests and will not have further comment. Any questions related to their decision should be directed to the individual athletes. All right. Hate to bring this up again, but we're going to go back to the top of the show. There's speculation that this could have been one of two things. Well, one of several. One, hey, we're tired. Tour de France will have just ended, and we're going to be beat, and we are not going to be in shape for the Olympic Games, and we want to make sure that the American squad has the most capable, most well-rested, most prepared riders on the team. That's option number one. Option number two, hey, we've been around a while. We've had our time in the sun. Let's allow some younger riders the opportunity to get onto the squad. That's option number two. Option number three, immediately raised by a number of people in emails and tweets that I've seen indicating, hey, is it possible that since each of these individuals were at one time or another teammates of Lance Armstrong, that their decision to pull themselves out of contention for the Olympic squad might have something to do with this new case that was filed by USADA. I would like to believe that this is the very first thing I said. We're going to be blown. We're not going to be able to be in contention for a medal, so let somebody else go. And I would prefer not to believe what others have speculated, and let's leave it at that. And finally, in pro cycling news tonight comes the story that Alberto Contador has re-signed or extended his contract with Team Saxo Bank for an additional 3 years after the conclusion of his 2-year anti-doping suspension. According to team manager Bjarne Riis, Alberto Contador will be returning to the Saxo Bank squad in August at the conclusion of that suspension. That means that while Alberto Contador will sit out this year's London Olympics and this year's Tour de France, there is every possibility that the Pistolero will be back in the professional peloton at the 2012 Vuelta a España, and that he'll be wearing Saxo Bank colors and will continue to do so for the next 3 years, indicating when the announcement was made, his appreciation for the support of Riis and the team through this trying time in his career. Well, that concludes the pro cycling news segment of this week's show. And I've really just got one more segment, and that is, well, this one's kind of special. It's a special request from none other than Mrs. Fredcast, the one and only my wife, Donna, who has a special request that she'd like to make to all of you. So without further introduction, because she hates it when I talk too much, here is my lovely wife, Donna, with a special request for Fredcast listeners.
Hey everyone, it's Donna, also known as Mrs. Fredcast. This weekend is the Bike MS Ride in Logan, Utah. David and I and Carlton Reed from BikeBiz.com and the Spokesman Podcast, Kendall from Confessions of a Bike Junkie blog, and a friend from elementary school, Mary, are heading up to do the ride this weekend. We're asking for your support. There are over 400,000 people in the United States affected with MS. The number in Utah is 1 in 300. Chances are you know someone who has this disease. The worst part about it, for me anyway, is the unpredictability, not knowing how I'm going to feel when I wake up in the morning. Will I be able to walk? Will I be able to see? As it is, I have constant numbness and tingling in my feet and hands, some days worse than others. But I'm one of the lucky ones. There are people with these symptoms, and the symptoms just don't go away. But there's hope. In the last 2 decades, 8 new disease-modifying drugs have been developed to help people like me. We're getting closer to finding the cure, and to do that, we need your help. So please donate today. It's easy to do. Go to tinyurl.com/DonnaMS2012 to donate to me. To donate to David, go to tinyurl.com/DavidMS2012. If you'd like to donate to Carlton, it's tinyurl.com/CarltonMS2012 or Kendall at tinyurl.com/KendallMS2012. Every dollar helps, big or small. We really appreciate your support. If you've seen the Disney Channel video featuring us and our kids, you've heard our daughters say that they ride for those who can't, in the hopes that someday they'll be able to. I ride to show that I will not give up in the face of this fight. Knowing that you're fighting along with me, supporting me and David in this cause means the world to me and my family. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to the show. Or as David says, enjoy the ride.
She couldn't wait to say that last part. No, but the point is really well taken. This is a very important cause to me and to my family. It's very personal. It's something that we deal with. Well, we've dealt with for quite some time, close to a decade. I'll never forget when Donna was first diagnosed and looking at the faces of our daughters, who at the time were quite small, as their mother struggled just to walk downstairs because she wasn't able to come downstairs and she wasn't able to feed them breakfast. And that was difficult for them to understand. Thankfully, this is, if you're going to have MS, as Donna's doctor said to her when she was diagnosed, now is the time to have it because there are so many advances and so many disease-modifying medications to help people like Donna with MS. She has her down days, but she has more up days than her down days. Part of that is just simply her positive attitude and her unwillingness to surrender in the face of this disease. For many, it's an invisible illness. It's something that you don't realize the fatigue that they have. You don't realize the difficulty they have walking, picking up a glass to have a glass of water, or pedaling a bicycle or walking down the street. And yet they're battling and you can't see it. As I've said, this is a very important cause to us. It's very personal. Many of you have already donated, and I'm hoping that many more will as well. Thankfully, we don't have a bad prognosis. Donna has relapsing remitting MS, which means that occasionally she'll have a flare-up. A few years ago, she went blind in one eye. A few years before that, she couldn't walk. Thankfully, for now, those flare-ups go into remission and they go away, but they always leave some measure of disability remaining, no matter how small. As I said, her prognosis is good. Thankfully, she's not going to die from this disease. But there are many who could, as they have the primary progressive form of the disease, and their condition will continue to deteriorate over time. So we could use your help. We're looking to find the cause and cure of this illness. I have seen firsthand the work that the National Multiple Sclerosis Society does to help people with MS, and to help fund research that has brought about these amazing medicines that are available today. We hope that you'll want to join the fight with us. Please go to those URLs Donna mentioned. They're all lowercase. tinyurl.com/, and then it's either David, Donna, Carlton, or Kendall, and then MS2012. I've got links in the show notes. I really hope that you'll join with us. Every little bit helps. A dollar, $5 and up. Please feel free to give. We would greatly, greatly appreciate your support. And thank you for allowing us some of your valuable time to bring this message to you and to your fellow Fredcast listeners. I know how valuable your time is, and I would never use it unwisely. So thank you for giving me of your time. And thank you to those of you who feel compelled to donate. We very much appreciate it. And with that, I would just like to once again thank our show sponsor for this week, Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/ the Fredcast. As I've told you time and time again, Jensen USA is the place for all of your cycling needs, mountain bike to road bike and everything in between. You're going to find a wide variety of brands and products at great prices and unparalleled customer service. And don't forget the great sale they're having right now on messenger bags, specifically on Nog messenger bags. Go check them out. www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast. And thanks to Jensen USA for their support. And thank you for supporting Jensen USA. For show notes and links and any kind of information about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, please go to www.thefredcast.com. You can also find a Jensen USA link there as well on the right-hand side of the page. If you want to keep up with everything that's going on in the life and times of the Fredcast, follow along on Twitter at twitter.com/Fredcast or on Facebook, and there are links on thefredcast.com for that. If you'd like to send me an email, please do so. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. And to voice your comments right here on the show for your fellow listeners and for me to hear, please call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's area code 661-513-3733. And I'm looking forward to your comments on all or any of the topics that we talked about on tonight's show. And with that having been said, you know what time it is. It's time for PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com, the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content of weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes and monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. Go ahead and check them out at www.IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling Music is called Criminal Kids, and it's by the band Literature. Thanks once again for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed, and thanks for telling your friends and colleagues and family and club members and team members about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast and about the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable Podcast as well. It's my pleasure to bring you the show. We've got a couple more shows to go in June as I bring you content from press camp and as we get ready for the Tour de France. So stay tuned. Lots more good stuff to come over the weeks and months to come. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.